Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Live. I think we're live.
Live.
So, Central Park. I'm not sure how many listeners we have right now, but welcome back to tonight's live event where we're going to talk about tape one from 13 Reasons Why.
13 Reasons Why.
Yes.
Compelling show.
It is a very
My daughter said it was, it's compelling. It's the word that she used.
Compelling is a good word for it.
She's 22.
Yeah.
College student. And my other daughter's 18, high school student. And the 18-year-old hasn't seen the movie yet. She read the book.
Okay, right.
But the 22-year-old said it's just too compelling. You just have to find out what's going on.
Well, yeah, it's difficult to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you start watching it, it's difficult to stop watching and to, you know, kind of pull yourself away.
You know, before we start, though, I have this other brain.
Uh-huh.
That sits right atop my head.
Yes.
So
we move it.
Let's do this. That's a brain.
Yeah.
It's not part of my anatomy. It's part of my
collection. I know. We did get a couple of messages about
so
that last
what's
week?
That thing on Richard's head? I know. So it is a brain, you know, that we use for explanatory purposes, and it just happens to be situated just above mine.
Now you're blocking it.
Now I want to block it.
See, when you sit up.
When I sit up straight,
and
act my age. Okay. So anyway, that we wanted to explain that little thing up there.
Yes. Well, tonight we're going to talk about the first two episodes, and there are some several particular points that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And what I'm excited about is that over the course of the weekend, I figured out how to do a few things so that we're going to be able to get fancy with it.
I wasn't able to be here over the weekend,
I know.
But I heard that you made new and improved version.
I did.
We saw that little delay, though.
You did. Well, I don't know that there's really a delay for people that are watching. It's a delay for something that we're looking at. But yeah, I don't think so. So today we're going to talk about tapes one and two, or tape one, but episodes one and two. I know that was maybe hopefully not too confusing for
folks. It is confusing because there are how many tapes?
There are seven tapes.
Each tape has two sides.
Correct.
So an episode
is one side of one tape.
Is one side of one tape. So there are 13 episodes.
Correct.
Okay.
So right.
We just have to clarify.
So today we're going to talk about episodes one and two, which is the first tape. And so let's start with episode one. And in episode one, we really get introduced to some of the main characters.
Right.
And there's a few points that we're going to make. And let me see if I can get my slide.
This will be part
up.
Of the new.
This is the new and improved.
Look at that.
So tape one, side A, is all about Justin. And Justin is one of the characters in the film that he's a basketball player. And maybe an important thing that sort of ties in with the second point is the fact that he was the boyfriend of Hannah's best friend when she first moved this town.
Hannah had one good friend when she moved to this new town.
Yes.
Her name was Kat.
Kat.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then Kat moved.
Right.
Leaving her boyfriend, Justin, behind.
Right.
Justin was what the kids call a jock. He was he was an athlete.
Yeah.
And he hung around with the other athletes.
Right.
And he was one of the things that comes out very early is that Hannah likes bad boys, is the way Kat said it.
Right, you know? Right.
And so you wait for this, who's the bad boy who's going to enter her life? And it happens to be this boy, Justin.
Right, right.
Sexy and sweet smile and all
right,
that stuff.
Right, right. So he, we get to get to meet him at a party at Hannah's house. But the first thing that we're really going to talk about with this is, I think it's important to talk about what it's like to be the new person in town. Now, over the course of these first two episodes, we have Hannah, but we also have Jessica.
And Jessica.
And we learned that Jessica, we learned this primarily in the second episode, mm-hmm. we learned that she is also new
That's right.
In town.
So we have Kat leaving.
Right.
New person Jessica and new person Hannah.
Right. Okay?
Which is reflective of today's mm-hmm. more mobile society. When
right.
when we were in school years ago, when we were in school, it was fairly stable. I don't know how it was in Florida because you always had new people coming in. Mm-hmm. But whereas in Pennsylvania, you essentially went to school with the same people from kindergarten through high school.
Right, right. Yeah, it is different now where people are much more transient. And so we're moving from place to place.
That's right.
And so we have these situations where mm-hmm. we have new people coming in, right. even in the middle of the school year. And we have
right.
people leaving in the middle of the school year. Mm-hmm. And so it's really... we really have this scenario now where people are having to meet new people. You're having to enter into a school environment
right.
that is where groups and cliques and relationships are already well formed.
Right.
And it's difficult to break into some of those right. relationships.
So you have the difficulties of a regular, well, normal adolescence. Mm-hmm. compounded by this fluid nature of people coming in and out of your life.
Right.
Okay. So for those people who are just arriving, it's a difficult transition
right.
to be integrated
right.
into these groups that have been established. These are right. kids who have been together for years, and all of a sudden the newcomer comes in.
Right. Yeah. It's very challenging. And so one of the I guess the beginning pieces, beginning right. Components of what we see, what eventually mm-hmm. turns into depression for Hannah, but also right. some significant issues for Jessica, is that as these new students in this area, in this town, in this school,
right.
we begin with some really negative experiences mm-hmm. right away.
Right off the bat.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can see those fault lines. Very right. early in this first episode.
Right, mm-hmm. right. In the very first, yeah.
you know, that things are not going to go well for somebody.
Right, right. So as we're thinking about this, again, it's really important that we think about how different life is now than it was when we were teenagers. Mm-hmm. Because sure, you know, if you were, what do they call them, military brats. Right. If your parent was in the military, mm-hmm. you probably had some experiences of traveling and starting new schools at different right. times. But that wasn't the typical, as That's we were right. just saying. Right. The other thing is that if you look at the lifestyle of the students in the school, I think that a lot of adults watch this and say, oh, well, that's Hollywood. That's very similar, very consistent with reality.
That's the reality that I know about.
Right.
Having raised, well, you and I both, mm-hmm. have teenagers,
right?
High school students, and that's exactly what they describe right. to me. These are kids who have parties, mm-hmm. they drink, they have sex, they use foul language, and this is when I was watching this, I was thinking, this is exactly mm-hmm. how my daughter describes the parties that she goes to.
Right,
exactly.
To yeah, the mm-hmm. yeah. So it's really important that we especially those adults that are watching. Mm-hmm. Especially those parents that are watching,
right.
to realize that this is not very far-fetched. I mean, right. the life of the current modern-day right. teenager is very different than it was when we were growing up, and they're under significantly enormous more stress, significantly right. more pressures from teachers and from other students and from right. you know these other expectations. So it really isn't like it was before.
That's right. And, you know, the fact that they have alcohol flowing, mm-hmm. you know, that there are kids who go to high school who have access to alcohol.
Right.
They can buy it. They can have their friends buy it or their siblings buy it. The alcohol flows freely at these parties.
Right.
So do the drugs.
Right.
Now, this doesn't mean that your child is indulging
right.
in drugs or alcohol, but the drugs and alcohol are there.
Right.
Well, they're there at most high school parties. So if your child starts going to these parties when she's in 9th or 10th grade,
right.
she's going to get exposed to them
mm-hmm.
at age 13 or 14.
Right.
You know, and she needs to be equipped because
right.
that's what's happening.
Right. And as we see, not just in this first episode, but we see in subsequent episodes, there are many parents who are very open and very honest about right. these experiences. Mm-hmm. And so it's not as though... again, pretty consistent with reality. You know, a lot, you may even know other parents who say, well, you know, I'd rather be at the house mm-hmm. and drinking and doing this than going out and doing other things, other That's places. Right. And so it's not too dissimilar from reality.
And please understand that there are parents for whom drinking is okay.
Right.
Kids can drink at other people's houses.
Right.
Not all parents have a prohibition against drinking or drugs for kids of high school age.
Absolutely. So it's just, just as we're getting started with this, I think it's mm-hmm. really important that we at least consider the idea that this is the way that reality is mm-hmm. today.
Another scene that struck me, because I think of, I have one teenage daughter now. Mm-hmm. In the first scene where we're introduced to Justin, mm-hmm. he and a friend are wrestling around under the sprinkler system. And of course, at the very end, he takes off his shirt.
Right.
You know? And I can tell you that the reaction that she had when he took off his shirt mm-hmm. is the reaction that girls have when boys take off their shirts.
Right.
It's a sexualized act that was introduced almost immediately in the first side of the first tape. Is that girls like guys who are hunks, and it is sexualized.
Right.
And it was, I thought, portrayed very accurately when he took off his shirt, because mm-hmm. that's what girls talk about.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So it's again, very, very different than it was in the past. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think another piece that we kind of alluded to just a few minutes ago, and this will be, this is also on our slide, so I'm trying to pull up the slide again,
right.
is the fact that, you know, we had this situation where Hannah lost her friend.
She lost, right.
She, you know, she starts out by saying that she when Kat moved away, mm-hmm. her best, I think she said, an only friend went with her.
That's right.
And that's a really important piece to this whole puzzle, mm-hmm. because what we're talking about with this then is that fact that Hannah felt comfortable. She felt connected to this right. other student. Mm-hmm. And when that other student left, we're going to see this recurring theme, because there's mm-hmm. I'm going to bring that up here in just another second with somebody else.
Right.
When these people that we feel close to mm-hmm. leave, there is a loss. Even if we've only known them for a short period of time, she didn't know Kat for very long because she mm-hmm. moved to this town in the middle of the summer.
Right. Right.
And then by the time the school year started, Kat had moved away. So it wasn't like she was, they had even known each other for very long.
And the thing to remember about these relationships, when they happen to teenagers have very intense emotions.
Right.
Everything is larger in teenagers than it is in adults.
Right.
So what we have to remember is that these are very hot relationships. These are very intense, very highly charged emotional relationships.
Right.
They're not measured by length.
Right.
They're measured by intensity.
Right.
They're measured by, I can tell her everything. She knows everything about me. That's an intensity that you might not even have with a family member.
Right.
And they glow very, very brightly and very hot for teenagers.
Right.
So even though she didn't know her very well, that was a significant loss when Kat left.
Right. And another one was when the guidance counselor left. We're going to see that in episode two, but it's another really important loss. And, mm-hmm. and I love the way that the character even brings that up,
right.
that it was another really important loss, because she said that, I can't remember her name, Miss Antilli, she was mm-hmm. leaving.
Right.
And she said, you know, that turned out to be a significant mm-hmm. thing for when Miss Antilli went to a different school and mm-hmm. they got Mr. Porter, right. the new, person sitting counselor, in that in that role as a guidance counselor. These were really important losses in Hannah's life, and so as parents, I think it's really important that we consider we don't marginalize mm-hmm. when our teenagers, you know, when you think, well, you've only known them for you know, a month.
That's right.
It's like you were saying, that white hot, it doesn't matter how long intense. The relationship lasts. It's the intensity of the relationship that's really important. And we see that quite often mm-hmm. where teenagers will get these very close,
that's right,
strong, intense relationships very, very mm-hmm. quickly. Right. And so when they're broken almost as quickly, it's still a significant loss.
Yeah, adults take longer to develop trust.
Right.
You learn over time that don't jump into these things. you know, get to know the person, right. make sure, okay, kids, teenagers don't do that.
Right.
Teenagers have this trust and they just jump right in.
Right.
This is my best friend. And you've only known each other for 2 months, but
right.
that doesn't matter
yeah.
because they share those most intimate details of their lives.
Right. Absolutely. So,
but you're right. Loss is the central issue here.
Right.
In this first take.
In these first couple of episodes, absolutely. It's really critical that we think about mm-hmm. and remember as parents, the fact that when our teens or our children lose someone with whom they feel very connected, it is a major loss. And it can lead to depression and lead to social withdrawal and other issues.
That's right. Because you're going through this grief process, mm-hmm. you know, and there's this succession of losses that she's going. Then on top of that, you add all the other things, traumas, mm-hmm. that happen to teenagers.
Right.
So they're in this fertile soil of loss.
Right.
And they can grow quickly, and mm-hmm. they can become outsized very quickly because they're growing right. in this very fertile soil of loss.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the last thing I think that we're really going to spend some time talking about here on from slide or side A,
right.
Is an let's let's go back to our previous slide. There it is.
Right.
Signs of suicide risk.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is the reason that we're bringing this up is because in the program, mm-hmm. they mention signs of suicide risk. The teacher that we mm-hmm. hear talking about it, she talks about signs of suicide risk in right. some detail. And I'm a little bit torn about what yeah. she says because some of the things that she says is very good. You know, the withdrawing from friends and family, right.
the
change in appearance, some of those things are really good, mm-hmm. but there are so many other things that right. we really need to be thinking about. Mm-hmm. You know, the change of in appearance, for example, you know, that's, yes, there are, I think mm-hmm. that's oftentimes more retrospective. You know, you look right. back and say, oh, you know what, she changed, she cut her hair and she right. did this and that. But at the same time, you know, you certainly will have people come to school with orange hair, and it's not necessarily a suicidal right. gesture right. or anything like that. It's just
trying something
just
else
trying
on.
Trying something new, right. yeah.
Trying something else on.
So there are other things that are much more reliable yeah. at mm-hmm. in looking at than right. changing appearance and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. The withdrawing from friends and family, absolutely.
Right.
That is a major cue or sign of a risk for suicidal ideation.
And at the same time, this is the period
right.
in their lives
right.
when they're withdrawing anyway.
Right.
So
especially from family.
From family.
Right.
Right.
So there is a balance there.
That's right.
If we see a withdrawal from friends, especially friends with whom the person has been very, very close, absent some big blow up right. or some big issue that sort of maybe created the need to separate. Otherwise, you know, if you see a separation from very, very close friends, that
right.
could be a cue.
But another thing that kids will do is they'll change friendships very quickly.
Right.
And as long as they're forming new friendships,
right.
it's probably safe
okay, right.
that they end one and form another. But if they end one, especially a very significant relationship, and they don't start another, and
right.
then they withdraw,
right.
you know, that could be problematic.
Right. Another important suicidal risk factor or thing that we notice when mm-hmm. a person is at risk for suicide is maybe as basic as it sounds is that we start to see significant drops in performance.
Right.
So the person, and this is across the board.
In all areas. Right.
right. Mm-hmm. So if they were an athlete, you see that, you know, they start pulling away from athletic events. If they were a good student, you know, you start seeing significant drops in right. grades.
And they start doing things that they used to do. You
right.
know, sort of the signs of depression, but again, in teenagers, more exaggerated.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So yeah, you see those big drops. You see them pulling away from clubs and mm-hmm. groups. And again, it's sort of the same kind of withdrawal,
right.
except instead of from people, it's withdrawal from activities and from academic engagement and those kinds of things.
Because there's no point in developing for the future because they don't plan to have a future.
Well, and that's going to get into the next thing. But right. But episode two mm-hmm. begins with Hannah dropping off her uniform for the
theater,
mm-hmm. the Crestmont. Right. And so she drops that off. And so again, here we have this separation. We have mm-hmm. this, you know, she seemed to enjoy her job before, right. but here she is pulling away from it and quitting her job. Mm-hmm. And so that's a major sign that we very commonly look for suicidal risk. You nailed the other one, which is they stop talking about the future.
Right.
Individuals who are suicidal or have suicidal ideation, they're no longer talking about the future. Mm-hmm. Everything is right now
right.
and past
right.
because the future doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. If they're thinking about hurting themselves or if they're thinking about suicide, they're not mm-hmm. thinking about the future anymore.
That's right. And you try to engage kids in conversation about the future, like, what are we going to do? And what right. are your plans in college, or, you know, maybe just plans for the summer? Are mm-hmm. you going to get a job? Are you going to do? If there's no thought about future. That could be one of the warning signs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just don't talk about it because it doesn't matter to them.
Right. And I like, again, that you say could be, because there could are be. Those who don't think about those things. They right. just don't think about the future in that way. But what we're really talking about then here is a change right. from a person who is future oriented to a person who's no longer future oriented, mm-hmm. a person who is engaged in academic and right. social and athletic endeavors mm-hmm. to a change that's not
right.
Engaged in those things. And so mm-hmm. those kinds of changes are massive.
Right.
And maybe the last thing, and this is sort of, I don't know that I would necessarily say it's cliche, but we do hear about it relatively often, and that's starting to give away things.
Right.
You know, they're starting to sort of purge their belongings. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe asking questions about, you know, hey, if I wasn't here anymore, what, right. you know, what would you want what of mine, or would you go to my funeral? Those right. kinds of questions, those kinds of behaviors are certainly concerning when mm-hmm. it comes to this.
Yeah, and the hard part in the adolescent, the teenage years, is that many of the behaviors that we associate with suicidal ideation or gestures or attempts are completely normal adolescent behaviors. The withdrawal, the being stuck in the present. You know, teenagers do think more about the present
right.
than we do. I mean, they tend to live very much in the present. So many of the characteristics that we consider to be risk factors are commonly seen in teenagers,
right.
particularly teenagers who tend to be a little bit more emotional.
Right, right.
So if there's any, but if you sense that maybe it's more than just typical teenage angst, mm-hmm. certainly seek professional advice.
Right.
You know, a
right.
visit or two. And maybe somebody can help you sort it out.
Right, absolutely. And Noreen is in the chat listening to us again this week, and she brought up a great point, the fact that sometimes students don't show any signs at all.
That's right.
And I think that that's a great point, because if we really look at some students' perspective of Hannah, mm-hmm. you wouldn't necessarily see anything.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. if we didn't see Hannah from Clay's perspective right. at times,
right.
Seem just fine.
You wouldn't have known.
Yeah, she you know, she was interacting with other people. Mm-hmm. She was going to parties. She was, you know, it is a relatively limited sample of behavior that we get. But, you know, she's laughing and mm-hmm. she's interacting and she's
the
doing
first,
different things.
The first suicide that I had to deal with, I was running a school at the time. It was completely out of the blue. Absolutely nobody expected it. Siblings, friends, family. Nobody. So Noreen is right. Sometimes it just hits and
right.
it's completely unanticipated. And there isn't a single thing you can do about it.
Right.
There were no warning signs.
Right.
And if that's the case, there's absolutely nothing that anybody could have done about
right.
it.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll be talking about this in much more yeah. detail throughout the course of this, the series that we're doing. But it is something that's really important to, right. to keep in mind mm-hmm. that, you know, many times, and as macabre as it sounds, oftentimes if a person is really determined,
yeah.
they're not necessarily going to show signs. And it, that's a really sad thing. And it's difficult. Obviously, it's difficult for family members, but it's really difficult for those of us in the mental health field, right, because, you know, we work really hard to try to identify those kinds of risk factors. And so we, you know, anytime we're working with a depressed patient, no matter what the age, mm-hmm, we try to explore some of those things.
Right.
And there are times when you just don't know.
You just don't know. Right.
So, you know, you find yourself questioning and questioning yourself to try to figure out what could I have looked at differently? What could I have asked differently? What could I have done differently? And you know, again, as bad as it sounds, many times there is nothing else. That's where they were. And so that's the decision that they made. Mm-hmm.
And it could be an impulsive one. I mean, they're also known for impulsivity. So it could just be done on impulse. You know, that particular day, it seemed like a reasonable choice to make.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, mm-hmm, all right. Did you have anything else from that first side there? All right.
No, that was all. I did think that they did set it up so that they introduced you to the characters and the themes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then?
So tape one side B is Jessica. And there's some big points that we need to point out here, because I love, there are certain aspects of this episode that I just love, because it so depicts what parents try to do. Mm-hmm. It is so indicative of what happens when we as parents try to get involved, and we try to think that, okay, we'll just do this because, mm-hmm, this will get our kid feeling better and this will get him out of it. And so we, like I said earlier, we open up with this scene with Hannah quitting, right, the Crestmont. And you know, after just a couple of minutes, we see Clay waking up in the morning, and his mom is trying to hurry him. And she's making breakfast. And he's like, okay.
I don't eat breakfast.
And he's getting coffee. And they're like, you drink coffee? And he's like, okay. You don't drink coffee. I don't eat breakfast either. So,
yeah, that was a wonderful thing.
The parents are trying. They're trying to get involved. They're trying to get engaged.
Right. And what I like about these parents is they're not disengaged. They are engaged.
Right.
I mean, the mother is really trying. And the dad is too. I mean, he's a little bit disengaged. Mm-hmm. But I think fairly typical.
Yeah.
Is that they were doing everything they knew how to do.
Yeah.
Were they missing the mark?
Yeah. Yes.
All the parents missed the mark a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But they weren't buffoonish. They weren't clowns. Right. They weren't incompetent.
They missed the mark in much the same way that many of us missed the mark.
That's right. That's right. And that's what I liked about these parents, is they weren't the Disney parents who were just, right, don't know anything and they're completely unaware.
At the same time, they weren't the Disney parents who just miraculously knew everything.
Right. That's right.
You know, they didn't have all of the answers, right, which was fantastic.
And again, you become aware of this generational divide,
right?
You know, because here the parents, they're tuned in. I mean, this mother was I thought Clay's mother was mm-hmm, pretty involved. The only parents who weren't involved were Justin's,
right?
I mean, they were off doing other things.
Yeah.
But the and Bryce's, the wealthy,
yeah, kid. We'll talk about them.
Yeah, but that comes later. But but in general, these other parents were involved. They knew what their kids were doing. They kept track of them. They They were monitoring their grades. She knew that his grades were dropping.
Right.
So they were monitoring it as well as they could.
Yeah.
They didn't know that all this was happening.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes.
And it was great because, you know, when mom came up and was talking to him about, you know, making breakfast, she said something about, you know, well, we haven't had dinner together in so long, we thought we'd have breakfast together. And he goes, oh, well, that explains why dad was interested in my life for the change.
That's right.
Or something like that. And it's, you know, again, we live our lives, you know, I think about, you know, my life at home, and, you know, mm-hmm, we're here until, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock at night.
Right.
And then we go home and, you know, the kids are getting ready for bed and they're winding down for the night. And so we don't really spend too much time talking with them. And, you know, we hope and we expect that everything is fine. That if there was something going on, that we would be informed.
That our kids would tell us, right?
We would know.
Yeah. And we don't. But I thought the most wonderful scene, and I think it was in this side, was the counselor who first brought them together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, she was clueless. She was accidentally effective.
She was, you know, that's interesting that you had that perspective. I didn't get that perspective from her.
What?
I thought that she was a bit of a hippie, but I thought that she was, I liked her. You thought that she was buffoonish.
Not buffoonish. She was clueless.
Clueless
about, because the teenagers are sitting there looking at, they're just shaking their heads and thinking, where is this woman from? And again, she wasn't completely incompetent by any means. But she missed the mark by so many miles. I mean, it's like a moonshot, you know, you sense it off into outer space somewhere, because the girls were just astonished at her. I don't want to say stupidity, naivete, but again, what I liked about it is, what do kids complain about adults? Number one, that we're too slow, that we don't just say it.
Yeah, she was slow.
Get out. And that we just don't know what's going on. We just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I get that.
But she didn't.
I get that, but I mean, this is so interesting. I wish we would have talked about this beforehand, because the way that I took it was that, yes, she was a little bit naive, but I think that that was part of her gimmick. I took that was part of her, you know, I know that she even says, you know, look, I'm not going to pretend like this school is a friendly place.
Right.
I'm not going to pretend like any of this stuff. And I know how silly it sounds for that. Somebody's trying to make up friends for you and everything. But I just thought that we would give it a try, that you would have at least one friendly face to look at when you're walking down the hall. And it may have been silly, but I don't know. I
can be
it.
A friend too. Oh, so we have to smile at you too when we see
them. I love the little banter that the girls got into about Harriet and
oh gosh,
Jezebel.
I need a Jezebel. I thought that was a wonderful scene. Again, the woman wasn't incompetent.
Yeah.
She wasn't stupid.
Yeah.
She was doing the right, you know, trying to do the right thing, but missed the mark. I mean, that was the whole thing. She missed the mark. And we do, as parents, we miss the mark. Parents and teachers, we just miss the mark. Because, and the other theme here is that everybody missed this.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody missed it.
Yeah. I mean,
the parents missed it, but so did the kids.
Right. But it was beautiful how, despite our different views of her, it did create such a strong relationship between the two girls.
Right.
They had something in common, and, and it brought them together, and their sarcasm and everything was perfect.
Right.
So
temperamentally, they were a nice match.
Yes. 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 Absolutely.
Good thing.
She was
a hoot.
She was. And then, but again, it's unfortunate. I kept wondering what would have happened had that guidance counselor remained. Mm-hmm. Had she been there throughout the whole thing, mm-hmm. how things would have been different. And we'll get to that in just a bit. But yeah, that to me is a very interesting, very interesting thought. Mm-hmm. So now let's get on to the second thing.
Yeah.
You know what? We didn't talk about the thing that we were going to talk about. And that is the fact that, so they get in there to have breakfast, and Clay picks up his drink, and there's a bottle of fluoxetine.
Better known as
Prozac.
Right.
So I had to pause it to try to, you know, see make sure that I knew what medication it was, and it was fluoxetine. Mm-hmm. And so it was Prozac. And so now, there are a couple of really important things that came out of this. The first thing is that Clay talks about not having taken that medication in a while.
That's
he
right.
even thought that it would probably be out of date.
Yeah.
And so what we have, or what we're suggesting here, is that Clay has a history of some depression.
Well, either that, but later on he says panic attacks.
Right.
You know, and so later on you see that he's kind of highly anxious, maybe prone to anxiety and or depression.
Right.
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 Mm-hmm.
So the thing that we really want to talk about here is the fact that mom just sort of took it upon herself mm-hmm. to contact the psychiatrist, to get a refill of the medication, to go get the medication, and to just put it on the table, kind of assuming that he's going to take it.
She said, because she told him, she said, no, it's not out of date. I just refilled the prescription.
Right.
Right. So she,
yeah.
Brand new stuff. And again, it was at that same breakfast.
Right.
So mom's trying to be proactive, mm-hmm. you know, and the dad's kind of funny, you know,
yeah,
later on.
It's probably a better way to do that.
Right. Before we get to the sentencing phase.
You yeah.
know, but that comes later in the movie. But again, we see mom trying to do the right thing.
Right.
And it's to me, it's hard to criticize her.
Right.
You know, to be critical, but
right.
she did try to do the right thing. So it's
right.
going to be critical.
Yeah. So, but the lesson here, I think, for parents is that, especially as our kids become teenagers,
right.
We can't make those decisions for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's it may be
decisions?
Harsh to hear about treatment and treatment compliance and some of those kinds of things.
Right.
You can't. You know, it's different when you have an 8-year-old who isn't paying attention in school and they're having difficulty with ADHD-like symptoms, and mm-hmm. so we get them to take their medication. The problem is that as they get older, 15, 16, 17 years old,
that's right.
yes, you still have control, mm-hmm. if I use the mm-hmm. quotations there, right. Air quotes, we still have control,
mm-hmm.
but they are independent people.
That's right.
And so we have to include them. And if you have any hopes of encouraging them and getting them to be compliant with some of those things, you have to have them involved in every step of the way.
They must be part of the process.
Right.
It cannot be done. There's nothing you or we can do to them.
Right.
We can work with them.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And whether it's medication or therapy, or it doesn't matter what it is,
mm-hmm.
it's part of a process,
right?
You know, and what you do is completely, whether it's medication or non-medication, no matter what it is,
right.
that's secondary to a
yeah.
process that they have to be a part of, and they have to have some ownership of the process.
Yeah.
If they don't feel some ownership,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to work.
Right.
You cannot, this is not dispensing medicine that does the work whether we're there or not.
Right.
You know, this isn't insulin
right.
where, you know, all you have to do is take the medicine. This isn't an aspirin that gets rid of the pain no matter what.
Right.
This is all done very differently.
Right.
And they have to feel some ownership.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Noreen just mentioned
breakfast. Or...
That's right. He didn't eat breakfast.
I love that breakfast.
He didn't even eat his breakfast.
Just love it.
But Noreen just wrote, you know, it's like that old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you
exactly.
can't for it can drink. And,
exactly.
and it's the same thing. You can, no matter how important the treatment may be,
right.
you're not going to force treatment on them.
That's right.
They have to be part of the process. They have to be engaged, and they have to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, how you get to that point will vary.
Right.
Different kids are going to be different. different teens are going to be different.
Right.
But you can't, it's not going to be as simple as hiding the pill bottle behind his glass of orange juice
right.
and so that he sees it and
dutifully takes it.
Right.
You know, it's going to be several weeks before it works
right.
anyway, you know, so.
Yeah. yeah. So it's just not going to work that way. So, as parents, you have to keep your teen involved and engaged mm-hmm. in the process. If you have any hopes of them, really
right.
taking part in it and ownership.
And we've talked many times about attachment parenting versus detachment parenting.
Right, right.
And this is a point where there should be some detachment parenting
right.
where you are handing some of the responsibility over to them.
Absolutely.
This would be one of those wonderful places where you do that.
Absolutely.
Bring them in part of the process.
So the next thing is one of the things that we hear repeatedly through the episodes
right.
is, you know, just get over it. Just move on. Just listen to the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
We hear these kinds of statements being made with the idea that just keep going. And
right.
this is another one of those things that's going to be a recurring theme.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to visit this again with episode 13.
Right.
And it's a massive issue with,
mm-hmm.
in episode 13, but we see it here early on in this in the program, because we're about a week. The whole program starts about a week out from Hannah's suicide. Mm-hmm. And from the very beginning, we have a person in one of the classes that says, mm-hmm. "Can we just move on? Yeah. I'm tired. This is depressing. Can we just stop talking about this?"
Right.
And then we have people throughout the two episodes telling Clay that he needs to move on. Mm-hmm. He needs to just get over it. That he needs to listen to the tapes and hurry up and get through them. And he's taking the longest of all to get through them and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it becomes obvious early on that everybody else has listened to all.
That a whole group of them have already listened to them.
They've already heard them. He's the only one who doesn't know.
Right, right. And so, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. And so, again, as parents, we oftentimes just want our kids to move on. We minimize, we marginalize their feelings, their thoughts, and their emotions, mm-hmm. and we try to just get them to push forward. We think that that's how we would handle it, and so we try to impose that upon them as though that's the way that they're going to handle it. Mm-hmm. But it's not as easy for them.
Right.
One of the reasons why it's not as easy for them is that, despite the fact that they're teenagers, despite the fact that they experience all the same emotions and feelings and thoughts mm-hmm. and everything that we do, they don't have the experience, they don't have the emotional regulation, they don't have a lot of the tools that we have that allow us to pick up and move forward. Mm-hmm. They are, the feelings that they have are very real.
Right.
There, of course, is talk about whether it's this program or even some other things where, you know, teenagers are feeling very depressed and reacting and responding very emotionally to these kinds of programs and to these types of things. And we say, it's just a TV show. You need to stop, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about that. You need to just move on. Go get your homework done. It's just not as easy as that.
Right. They're going through a grief process.
Right.
And there is no time limit. We know the grief process occurs in 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 steps, depending on who you read. But we know it's a sequence of steps that you go through. Teenagers don't have that understanding,
right?
Number one. And number two, there's no time limit.
Right.
It might take you a month to go through a stage. It might take you 3 months to go through a stage. It might take you 2 months and somebody else 4 months. So there's no time limit to the stages. You take whatever time you need to accomplish mm-hmm. each step of the grief process.
Right.
You can't rush through them.
Right.
And you can't ignore them. If you ignore them, it's going to come back to create problems. And if you rush through them, it's going to create problems.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the early developmental theorists mm-hmm. talk about getting stuck at different stages.
Right.
And this is exactly a very similar scenario where, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't process through it, you're going to get stuck. Yes, it's true that you don't necessarily have to experience every one of the stages mm-hmm. of grief.
Or that they have to be in that order.
Right.
Necessarily.
But it does, but at the same time, we kind of do go through mm-hmm. all of those. We do get angry. We do have, even if it's just a moment of denial, so we do kind of go through all of them. As you said, just at different speeds, they
different
last different different amounts of time. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that, you know, we can't pressure someone to get through it.
That's right.
We can't. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you take them to Disney. It doesn't matter if mm-hmm. you give them a new car. It doesn't matter if you punish them for not moving on. They're not going to go through it any faster than their emotional abilities allow them to get through
it. That's right.
It's just not going to happen.
Right. It's going to happen in their good time, and you just have to be patient and let them go through it at their pace.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you may have times where you get through, you were angry mm-hmm. and you get to, acceptance, but you could go back and get angry mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm.
That's
It just so happens to be mm-hmm. that way. And so, you know, especially as we get new information and we understand things a little bit differently, mm-hmm. you know, that can happen. So, and we certainly see these characters going through these different stages in very, very different ways.
Right.
There are Justin, he looks rough
mm-hmm.
Justin, right? He's the subject of the first tape, right?
Mm-hmm.
he looks very rough by the time we're getting into even up to date. Because mm-hmm. he is going through some of the things that we learn about him right. in the tapes. Mm-hmm. And he's struggling.
He's
struggling. And we see, you know, a lot of this is where some of the substance abuse and mm-hmm. all that starts with some of the characters. So
right.
We can't force them to get through it mm-hmm. any faster than they're going to get through it.
Right.
So, all right. Now the last real key thing that we're right. going to talk about here is the difference mm-hmm. between compliments and objectifying.
Right.
Now, one of the things we learned near the end of this second episode, so tape one, side B, and one of the things that really turns Jessica against Hannah, actually leading to her slapping mm-hmm. Hannah in the middle of the Monets.
Right.
Monties. Monets. Sounds so fancy. It is the fact that Alex put out this list.
Right.
And this list supposedly said that Hannah had a great backside. Mm-hmm. And it led to all kinds of conflicts and issues between Hannah and Jessica, but also between different students in the school. And there's a difference between, and again, this happens a couple of times in the program. This is a difference between objectifying and complimenting.
Right.
You know, you can say that someone is nice looking. You can say that they are attractive, mm-hmm. but what we're seeing, and this is surprisingly common in teenagers, and what we see in schools today, is the fact that we are starting to have a lot of objectifying, mm-hmm. Objectification,
yep.
if that's the right word, of especially female students in schools today.
Yes, we are.
And we objectifying, sexualizing,
right.
there is a tremendous amount of this happening mm-hmm. in schools today. And it is a major issue.
Do you know that the original Ken doll was sort of the Ken doll that's out right now is buff. He's got an 8-pack and uh-huh. it's got pecs mm-hmm. and short. The original didn't.
No?
No. Just flat, just nondescript.
Okay.
Now this one is cut
mm-hmm.
and buff and has a 6-pack or an 8-pack or something. We have sexualized.
Yeah.
The culture has sexualized.
Everything.
And you see this in school. We always say whatever exists outside the school exists inside the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this sexualized culture
mm-hmm.
in elementary, middle, and high schools.
Right.
It's most obvious in middle and high schools, but it exists in elementary schools.
Right.
You have little kids who want to show their little elementary school kids wanting to show their abs mm-hmm. or, you know,
right.
they're trying to look like the models that they see
right.
in the media. And so this objectification is rampant.
Mm-hmm.
It's epidemic in schools. It is a central feature of what these kids are talking about, but that's what the culture is feeding them.
Right.
And that's what they're doing.
Right.
Highly sexualized.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, we have, whether it's clickbait that you see on, mm-hmm. on Facebook and mm-hmm. other forms of social media, or it's just, you know, lists that you find on YouTube and other video formats.
Right.
Students today are really, comparing and contrasting, and they're doing so in very overt. Very mm-hmm. plain language types of ways.
Right.
They're using pretty amazing
mm-hmm.
methods of right. conveying this,
right.
and it really is causing
pretty
some problems. And it's, you're right, it's very raw,
right.
and it has the risk of being very hurtful mm-hmm. to people, causing lots of problems.
It's very offensive. I think it's most offensive to girls. I think it can be offensive with boys, but I think most of it is directed at girls, and it is about their body parts, and it's highly sexualized, and it's highly toxic, I think is the right
yeah.
word. But there's an interest. One of my favorite scenes in this, no, I shouldn't say favorite. One of the scenes that I was struck by was when the list got passed around. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a list of 10,
right?
10 features. And one of the girls had the best lips.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Hannah had the best derriere. This girl had the best lips. And she was flaunting it.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah was embarrassed. Hannah was absolutely mortified.
Right.
Damaged by this list. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think she was damaged as much that
Jessica?
No, the guy, Alex. And that Alex did the list,
mm-hmm.
as she was about being on the list. I was never quite sure whether she was more offended that she was on the list, being objectified like that, or that Alex generated the list. But the difference in response between her and I've forgotten the name of the girl with the lips. It was it.
Oh, I can't remember.
I can't remember her name. But later on,
mm-hmm.
so what was striking about that was that, yes, this stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
And some kids not only get over it, they see it as a badge of honor.
Right.
You know, I got the best, I have the best butt. You know, oh, look, everybody thinks I'm. And some girls would react almost with pride.
Right.
Hannah happened to be damaged by it. The solution is you have to know you have to know the person.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You can't stop kids from doing this. I mean, that kid went to the garbage can and dug it out.
Right.
After Hannah threw it out, he went and dug it back out of the garbage. Right. You can't stop this stuff.
Right.
But you better know who your kids are and who's going to be offended by that sort of thing.
And we got a taste of this about Hannah in the first episode when, and I do wonder if it would have been different for Hannah had the issue with Justin in the first episode not happened, mm-hmm. where he sent around the picture, basically, you know, in essence, an upskirt picture of her while she was sliding down the slide. Right. Mm-hmm. Had that not been passed around and started the rumors, would she have felt differently about it? And it's hard to tell.
And again, he didn't do that.
Right.
You know, those are his good friends.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so again, as adults, as you know, as school staff and school professionals and as parents, we have to be mindful that this happens, you know, not necessarily just how do we respond to it, but understand that it happens and understand that it has varying effects on different students.
Right.
And we can't always predict who's going to respond well to it and who's not going to respond very well to it, mm-hmm. because, you know, you can never tell.
That's right.
And even the students themselves may not be able to mm-hmm. anticipate how they're going to respond.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
So it does happen, and we want to make sure, you know, we have systems in place to prevent some of that objectification. Though with social media, that's really, really difficult, if not impossible.
Right. And you know what I thought about when I was watching that scene of the list? We talk about violent video games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact of the matter is that most kids who play violent video games do not become violent. Right. Most kids who, you know, and we keep seeing the same pattern. 80% of kids can handle this.
Mm-hmm.
20% can't. What the challenge for adults is, who are the 20%?
Right.
You know, that's what you have to know. Most kids would either laugh this off, or they would say, oh, they're jerks, or they would get over it, or they would be offended, but then they would get over it.
Right.
You know, that most kids are obviously able to handle this because this happens in schools every day.
Right.
So obviously most kids are able to handle it. What we have to be ever vigilant about is how do I identify those kids who might be more troubled by it, who might be offended to this extent by it, whether we're parents or counselors or teachers.
Right. Absolutely. Because it will affect different people in different ways.
You know, when we talk about the school shooters, you remember, because we had lunch with one of the guys who was on the commission for Columbine, and
way back in the early 2000s,
right after it occurred, and so you know everybody had opinions of why it happened, and that later on it came out that, well, they were really mentally ill too. They had an underlying mental illness, and that's what we have to be careful about, is where do those illnesses lurk, and how do we know those.
Yeah, and it is important to know that, you know, that all people, so it kind of goes both ways, mm-hmm. that all people who play violent video games and listen to that kind of music aren't going to be become violent.
Right.
Similarly, all people who are mentally ill, of course, aren't going to act out violently or
that's right.
anything like that. And the majority of people who are mentally ill never hurt themselves right. and never have suicidal ideation mm-hmm. or anything like that. But because there is an overlap, it's really important, right. as you said, that we become very vigilant and we be very mindful of what's going on and,
right.
And just watchful, pay attention.
And keeping in mind that all of these things are, and all of these behaviors, attitudes, moods are all a normal part of adolescence.
Absolutely.
And so how do you make that distinction? It's very difficult to make that distinction, but it's one we need to be aware of
right.
and keep working on.
Noreen mentioned something in the chat about the clothing that they sell yeah. at stores now. And and that is a really important point because we talk about this subjectification as though it's something that happens in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. However, there's some pretty inappropriate clothing out there, especially for girls. Mm-hmm. Especially for girls, there's some really inappropriate clothing out there. You know, I've seen, as ridiculous as it sounds, like little bikinis for toddlers.
For toddlers.
That say like Juicy mm-hmm. on it and stuff like that. It's like
pink.
For mm-hmm. for toddlers. And so we start at that age and parents complain, whether it's elementary or middle school, parents will complain about their kids wearing, very short shorts, mm-hmm. very short skirts and revealing clothes in general. Mm-hmm. And of course they're buying them right. for their kids, first right. of all, but second of all, it is again part of the culture because the reason parents buy them for their kids is because the parents also see that most other kids are wearing
them. That's what they're
wearing. And so mm-hmm. they want them to be able to fit in and right. to be part of it. And so I guess one of the things that we need to end this session with, and we'll probably end most of our sessions with, is that as parents, we really have to do a better job of talking with our kids.
Right.
When your daughter wants some of these kinds of clothing, mm-hmm. you're not just going to say no.
That's right.
You're going to have a conversation and you're going to say, well, let's think about what message we're sending right. when we wear something like that. Well, let's think, and it may be a good message that, hey, look, I'm confident, this is comfortable mm-hmm. to me, and that's fine. But I remember that workshop we did up in Rehoboth Beach, mm-hmm. and I made a statement about being bullied,
right.
and I made a statement. What I said in that. And I'm sure that you guys listening won't respond the same way. I made a statement where I said, it's important if you're being bullied, if you're a victim right. of being of bullying, it's important that you are aware of what you're doing that elicits that bullying response right. from people. Right. Not because it's your fault,
right.
but because you need to be aware. Mm-hmm. Because if we're aware, then we can. Have a preparation. And man, that woman really got disappointed mm-hmm. when I said that, because I think I said something about, if your middle schooler is going to take Pokemon cards to school,
right.
he's got to be ready for some responses from his classmates. Mm-hmm. If your daughter or son
right.
is going to wear clothing mm-hmm. like this to school, he or she just has to be prepared, emotionally,
right.
behaviorally prepared to deal with how other people are going to respond
that's
to
right.
it.
What the reaction will be.
And that's a conversation. You have to be able to talk to your kids. You can't just do things and send them out there and expect that, everything's going to be fine. They'll know how to handle it.
You and I wrote a book a few years ago. More than 2011?
12. Yeah.
Yeah, we wrote in 11, published in 12. And we're revising it now.
Yeah.
But the more work we do in this area, the more I believe in the fundamental premise of that book was teach, don't punish.
Right.
And this is another one of those times when you say, we're going to talk about this each week, and I hope we do, because you have to teach your children,
right.
and you have to work with them from the time they're little, every year, not impose rules on them.
Right.
And if they break the rules, they get punished.
Right.
That's not the way we want to teach children. Right. We want to be close to our children when they're 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 And we've said this before, so that when they do something, they tell us,
right,
not somebody else.
Exactly.
And if they're doing that at 8, and they're doing it at 10, and they're doing it at 12, and they're not afraid to be punished, they're going to do it at 15 and 16 when, right, the stakes are much higher.
Right. Absolutely.
But if they're not, if you're not allowing your children to take ownership of some of this stuff and become part of the process at 8 and 9 and 10, you're not going to resurrect that at 15 and 16.
Right.
And you're going to get left out of the discussion.
It's just not going to happen. But, yeah. So, mm-hmm. All right.
But do it early. Get started early.
Early and often.
Right.
Like voting. No? All right.
I didn't see that one coming.
Well, so here is our list, yeah, of dates. Mm-hmm. So last week's I thought was a success, and I'm really pleased with how today's went.
Right.
Our next episode will be next Thursday, May 11th. It's Thursday, May 11th. Okay. We'll start at 6:30 again, and on that one, we're going to talk about tape 2, which, yes, is episodes 3 and 4. All right, episodes 3 and 4. We're starting to get into it.
Yep. Rumors and reputations.
Rumors and reputations.
Wow.
So that's going to be the topic here.
That was painful to watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to. So if you haven't watched it yet, try to watch episodes 3 and 4. If you have watched it, consider watching it again, just so that we can have some conversations, right, about some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are again, we're really getting into some heavy stuff with, right, some of these. In the meantime, you know, if you want to get in touch with us, here's some ways to get in touch with us. There's our email addresses.
Yeah.
There's Twitter. Noreen said earlier when we were talking about how people dress and everything, she said that's another reason why Dr. Richard can't have a Twitter account. She knows.
Why?
She knows. Because, why? Because you'll post things. Who knows what you'll post?
Everybody tells me. My own daughter told me that.
I know.
Noreen, we need to talk.
Everybody knows but you. So... we're here.
I mean, right now
it's an intervention.
I have to take your word for it.
It's an intervention.
So I appreciate the help from saving me from myself.
Yeah. See, we know.
Okay.
So, all right. So, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you to let us know,
yeah,
what you think of these live events.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally digging it. I like these a lot.
I can tell.
I like the idea of being able to. Well, we used to do this on Mixlr. Remember when
we used to present
live on Mixlr?
This is better.
Those were fun. This is a lot better. Yeah.
I'm glad we can hear from people too in real time. This,
yeah,
is fun.
So, and if you know somebody who may be interested in these topics, you know, certainly get them, let them know about it. I will be posting the link to next week's live chat soon, so that I'm figuring out how to plan ahead on some of these things. So I'll get that.
I know.
We'll get it out soon so that you can plan it. You can bookmark it. You can be ready so that when 6:30 on May 11th comes around,
you're
right at right where you need to be to watch and to communicate. And there we go. All right. Anything else?
No.
All right.
Okay.
It was great to talk with you guys this evening. And so until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.